joining us here is quite the celebrity, the great Ed McCaffrey.
Hi, Ed.
Well, thanks for that intro. Appreciate it.
Well, right.
Yeah. No, good to be here, man. How you doing today?
We're doing great, man. It's good to visit with you. I was a big fan of yours in your playing days. My kids now, who are teenagers, they know you as the 9/11 guy.
Oh, there you go.
Right? Which,
yeah.
It is what it is.
I don't know that I've earned that moniker, but I know what you're referring to.
Yes, it's not like on a T-shirt or anything, but in their brains, they're like, oh, that was the... They know the whole story, so...
Corby actually also has a very platonic relationship with your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met her last year.
Yeah.
We were going wireless, and she was very nice. Like, walking around the media center, she was very kind. We didn't know who she was. We just wandered up to her and started talking with her.
Really?
And then I'm like, wait a minute. Are you Ed's wife and Christian's mom and all that?
Wow. So I got an Ed's wife out of you. That's good, because normally it's Christian's mom. So
yeah, I know.
You're making me feel good right now. Yeah.
Did you have – because, like, Bob back here was lucky enough to see Kyler Murray play when he was, like, 7, flag football.
Wow.
And season tickets.
Just back and forth, right?
Season tickets. Seven-year-old
They sponsored the jerseys.
Was that
it was like Chico Bale bonds.
Oh, yeah. Was that like the cooler in the lounge chair that you threw out there?
You know, it was like $200 to sponsor their jerseys.
Wow.
And next thing you know, we got first pick in the draft playing quarterback for us. So
that's pretty impressive.
If you're going to sponsor a flag football a tackle football team.
Oh, that was tackle.
Oh, that was tackle?
Yeah, full pads.
At 7, it was kind of early.
I thought it was kind of weird, but...
I played baseball. Mine was Neville Plumbing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know what they put. Duffy's Pizza. I remember. We used to have...
Duffy's... Was that post-game, every game?
Little League Baseball, you had some company's logo on the back of your jersey.
It's
early NIL.
That's still going on.
Right. I didn't get a penny from Duffy. You know what? They did have all-you-could-eat pizza, though, so they lost money on that deal.
We had a hardware store. That didn't really help me at 8 years old.
My kid's basketball team in fifth grade, he joined this new team, and on their shorts it said Kings. And I was like, oh, somebody must be one of the dads is like a Sacramento Kings fan or whatever.
Yeah.
No. The guys owned a bar called the King's X, and they put that on the kids' shorts.
A bar, too. That's perfect.
I know.
One of the dads probably owned it. He's like, hey, I'll sponsor you.
Totally, totally.
Kids.
So my angle, though, with Kyler Murray was, do you have, like, hilarious video of Christian playing flag football where nobody can even get close to him?
I don't think he played flag football. I think he started tackle at 7. Lisa and I never signed our boys up for football until they asked.
Yeah.
So our first son that wanted to play was Max. He's a couple years older. At 9 years old, his buddies were playing. And so he's like, I want to play football. My buddies are playing. And so we signed him up at 9. And then as soon as Christian saw Max playing, he wanted to play.
Yeah.
So he started with tackle. Lisa was his soccer coach before that, like 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
And she was such a tough coach that he wanted to leave soccer and play football. That's that's how difficult of a coach she was.
Because she played in college,
4-hour practices, yeah. She played in college. She was a pretty phenomenal soccer player back in the day, and it's great for conditioning and athleticism. And although most of the kids just follow that little lump of kids that follow the ball all over the soccer field at 4 and 5, but no, he started tackle at 7 and never looked back.
So, Ed, I'm curious, along those same lines, the generational fun of this Super Bowl would be asking Ed McCaffrey, if I ever got the chance, when was the first time you met Kyle Shanahan, and was he like 8 at the time?
He was a little older than that,
okay.
But he was in grade school, and it was in 1994. He was a ball boy for the San Francisco 49ers. Future Hall of Fame coach Mike Shanahan was the offensive coordinator on that team. And I got out there, and I just remember him running around with some of the other coaches' kids, and I remember him catching balls from Steve Young, who put him in different spots on the field just to get some throws in. I remember him working with Jerry Rice after practice. You know, Jerry say, hey, stand here, let me practice a release. And the thing that I remember about him is he was always happy and smiling. I used to kind of chuckle. I'm like, they're running this kid through the ringer, man, just making him shag balls and run all over the field. He looked like he was dying, but I could tell right away this guy loves football. And I didn't even know Mike Shanahan that well. I came in after they had started training camp and joined the team. But throughout the course of that year, you know, I knew of him. Didn't really get to know him better until I got to Denver.
Yeah, I was going to say. So now I'm putting this together, and I suppose it's really basic if I was paying closer attention in 1994.
Or any attention.
Right. Yeah. But you guys
hold on a second.
You guys went Super Bowl 29 in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
That gets Mike Shanahan the head coaching job in Denver, and you're one of Shanahan's guys that makes the trip with him?
Yeah, and I was a little shocked. Cause I think there were six or seven of us that made the trip from the 49ers to Denver, and he wanted to bring as many players as he could that understood how he coached, how he expected practices to go, the work ethic that he expected, and also just to know the plays. And so I was one of them, but I was shocked that they wanted to sign me. You know, I had a one-year deal with San Francisco, and he barely talked to me during the year. There were four receivers, right, and two of them were Jerry Rice and John Taylor.
Sure.
Won multiple Super Bowls, and so it was Nate Singleton and I were the other two receivers. I mean, think about only carrying four receivers on your roster. So there's 14 in camp, and four made it. So I was blessed to make the team, win a Super Bowl. He was usually concentrating on teaching, you know, talking to Jerry and talking to John and Steve Young and Brent Jones and Ricky Waters and all the starters on the team. He didn't say much to me, but I had so much fun on that team. I was only there 7 months. It was an incredible organization, great teammates, great coaches, and I was really excited. I thought maybe the 49ers would sign me back, but, you know, Mike offered me a better deal in Denver, and I'm like, let's do it. I got a chance to compete for a starting position, even though we had two first-round draft picks as starters at the time. And he lived up to his word. He gave me a chance to compete. And I came up the ranks with a guy that was a practice squad guy, Rod Smith, who ended up being a pretty good player.
Yeah.
And we won two more Super Bowls, and the rest is history. But I got to know Kyle better because he was always around the team. He was on the sideline with Mike. Got to know Mike better. But Mike and I became way better friends after I retired. And after he retired, really, and just started hanging out and watching film together and trading war stories. But gained a lot of respect for him and Peggy over the years, and they've done such an incredible job with Kyle, not just as a coach, but as a human being and as a person. But he's taken this whole coaching thing to the next level. I mean, this is his brand of what, you know, Mike used to do back in the 90s and early 2000s. But with the condensed formations and the shifts and motions and all the different things they do today, different RPO concepts, he's really taken it to the next level. So I'm just really impressed with where he was as this grade school kid, as a ball boy, watched him play in high school and college, and then give it a shot in the NFL. Remember when he was trying to make a team, and then remember when he decided he wanted to go into coaching, and man, has he crushed it ever since.
And then, just to bring it full circle, what was your perspective when he trades for Christian? That's crazy.
Yeah, no, well, Lisa and I were ecstatic. We went to Stanford. I'm like, we're going back to the Bay Area. We got a lot of friends out there. You know, it's nice and sunny, beautiful place to live. But most importantly, I knew what kind of coach Kyle was.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, I want him to play for Kyle. And I also knew that, you know, Anthony Lynn, my old teammate, was his running back coach. And Bobby T, who's legendary, been coaching running backs for 50 years. And Brian Greasy was a quarterback coach. And the Kubiak brothers are there. John Lynch is the GM, who was he threw passes to me, believe it or not. He was a quarterback at Stanford and was a Bronco as well. So I knew the type of people and the type of coaches he was going to be around. And so we were ecstatic. It's interesting because he wasn't as confident. He left Carolina, and he's like, look, I know that you guys know the Shanahans, and there's a family history here, but I was four during Super Bowl 33. I don't remember anyone really. And so one of the great stories, I think, storylines at least, is that, you know, Christian and Kyle met the first day he signed with the team, and they sat down for over an hour and talked about it. It's like, look, I know our families know each other, but man-to-man, we're meeting each other for the first time here. You know, tell me, you know, what you love about the game. I'll tell you what I love about the game. What's your mindset? What's my mindset? And how are we going to do this? And, I mean, Christian left the meeting thinking, oh, I'm in the right place.
Yeah.
And how amazing is it with the way that that position has been devalued in the league over the last decade or so, that he's getting MVP consideration? He's just had an incredible season.
Yeah. No, and you know, if you look at his numbers, I mean, he put up pretty good numbers in Carolina and everywhere that he's ever been. But the difference is that this team, it has great coaches and a lot of really great players. So it allows you to just go out and play football and not have to, you know, the team doesn't have to rely on you to do everything. I mean, you want to take away the run. They got George Kittle and they got Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel. And you get to move those guys in and out of the backfield and got a good O-line and they're coached well and got a good defense. So, you know, you put up the same numbers, but teams can't concentrate as much on you, hopefully. And if they do, then you act as a force multiplier. And I think each one of the skill players kind of acts as that force multiplier. Who are you going to take away? That's going to be the challenge for Kansas City's really good number two ranked defense. But That's the challenge when you face a team that has multiple threats, and he's found that in San Francisco.
This is Ed McCaffrey here for the Low T Center, by the way.
All right.
$25 off, or $25 for your T-level tests going through this month. So get it tested, people. Do you impart anything wisdom-wise to Christian for Super Bowl week, or would he be like, whatever, Dad, I was four, or it's things have changed? Is there anything you can tell him throughout the week?
You know, we've talked about football throughout his whole lifetime, so he knows how I think. I know how he thinks. He's a grown man. He's been doing this a long time now. I tell him to go do your thing. You know how to prepare. You know how to take care of your body. You know how to watch film, study your playbook. You know how to practice. You know, just be ready to go and go do your thing. There's not much more for me to say. He's got great coaches. They're in the meeting rooms. They're coaching him up, and now you just got to go compete.
Was there any, you know, the running back position, and Christian may end up being one of the last ones that gets a really, really good contract. Does he ever talk about that, the fact that it has been devalued, and it makes no sense to anyone with how important he is, with how important the running backs are to every single team? It's a really weird spot for a lot of those guys.
It is a really weird spot. And the funny thing about it is that the position itself in games is not devalued.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
The running back, you usually get the most touches in the game. And the running backs in this game will probably get the most touches on both teams.
Yep.
So the importance of the running back position is not devalued in terms of how important they are to helping a team win and score points offensively. Because of the way the salary cap is structured and with franchise tags, because there's not five of those guys that collectively can get paid enough to really create a free market, they get paid less on average. Tight ends aren't much ahead of running backs, to tell you the truth, right? But those are two positions where if you took the three best players in the league at that position and allowed them to be complete free agents, they'd be paid like receivers.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce is the same way in Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
Tight ends get a little more than running backs. But if you said, hey, there's no franchise tag, he'd get paid like a receiver, right, because of how valuable he is. And Christian's the same way. So I think it's interesting because the running back position has evolved. People still think 4 yards in a cloud of dust, right? But now the receivers are moving out to slot. They're catching passes out of the backfield at 100 catches a clip, right? And now they're turning into this hybrid player. And, you know, Debo and Christian are two interesting case studies. One is a receiver that can play running back. One's a running back that can play receiver, kind of the same guy. So why are they not, you know, compensated the same way? They should be, in my opinion. But it's just the NFL owners, right? They're smart. They try to protect themselves. They're like, hey, man, we can't have complete free market. Let's try to put some caps on positions so we can all control our salary cap. And it just happens that running backs kind of got put in that category. But in today's game, you'll see all the running backs that are going to get drafted in the first round are usually going to be every down backs. They're not going to be short yardage goal line backs or, you know, run on first and second down and then put our scat back in. It's going to be a guy that can stay on the field for every play because it poses so many challenges for defenses. You stay in your base personnel, so you're leaving your linebacker, your safety in, and now what if it's a pass? You got to cover him with a linebacker or safety. The best running backs, there's a couple of them, it's going to be hard to cover them.
Yeah.
So now you got to bracket them. So now you're not covering somebody else. That's the same challenge they'll see this week. How are you going to stop the back out of the backfield? Bracket them. Well, you got a good tight end and a good receiver and another pretty good receiver and a fullback that can slip out of the backfield. And that's the chess match that's going to be played. But I know if you're head coach, you like the ability to leave one guy on the field for every snap.
I bet I could count on your support then for my proposal, which is the franchise tag is weapon. Like, if you want to tag a running back, it's at the weapon price, wide receiver.
Yeah, like skill positions
tight
all together.
100%.
You're
hired.
Thank you. Kittle, Kelce.
You're hired.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's what they do on the offensive line. You can't tag a center because you got to tag them at the tackle rate.
100%.
Why don't we do that to the weapons?
I believe you. I think if you're going to have a franchise tag, you should include all the skilled players.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Okay,
amen.
Good.
I'm with you.
Can we talk quickly about the quarterback? Because you played with Hall of Famers. How are you assessing the early returns on Brock Purdy as the last player drafted and just his amazing ascent?
You know what's funny? Like, when I was in the league, after I was in the league 4 or 5 years, I didn't even know where guys went to school, and I didn't know where they got drafted, nor did I care.
Yeah.
You know, at one point, we'd won some Super Bowls. I'm like, okay, here's the new guys. And you evaluate them based on their personalities in terms of are they good dudes or not, and then you watch how they play. That's all that matters.
Right.
What difference does it make if you're the first pick of the draft or the last pick of the draft or you go undrafted? You know, I mentioned Rod Smith earlier. He was undrafted.
Right.
He's a Ring of Famer, right? Hopefully a Hall of Famer one day. So what difference does it make whether you were drafted or not? Watch the film. Like in football, they always say, hey, the film don't lie, right? Watch the film. What are you seeing? I'm seeing a quarterback that got his team to a Super Bowl and led the league in most statistical categories for quarterbacks. So dude can play. I don't know. You can talk about where he got drafted, but I'm watching the film and saying this dude can play.
Yeah, and the way he wins with his feet. That was so big.
So big in Detroit, wasn't it?
It really
was. The two big runs he had were big differences in the game.
No doubt.
And that's one of the things I think he brings. People underestimate his mobility, but whether it's actually tucking and running for a first down. And, by the way, he wasn't sliding either in that game. He was trying to move the chains and score. Or whether it's being elusive enough to buy time and escape the pocket. That's what Holmes does.
Right.
That's something Brock Purdy has shown he can do.
It's weird, too, because... You know, I guess it's not weird, but from a Dallas perspective, people hate San Francisco, right? That's just the natural rivalry and things like that.
I remember when we beat them in the NFC Championship back in 94. And there was, I mean, that's when I understood how serious
Huge.
The rivalry
yeah,
was. I mean, that was like the Super Bowl
yes.
for us.
It was three or four-year window, whoever won that game.
We got to play at home, but Dallas had won the previous couple of years. And I didn't understand. Playing for the New York Giants, we battled Dallas. But I didn't know how intense it was until 1994. But it's a big deal because they're two of the best NFC teams.
And it goes back to the early 70s,
yeah.
You know, playoff-wise. So the hatred's there, but it's really difficult because all those guys that we just talked about and you've talked about on the team, Christian included, they all seem like really good guys and fun guys and likable people.
So fun to watch.
Yes.
Are you telling us the guys on Arrival could be good guys?
I know.
We don't have to have hate, right? We learned that last year. Everybody loves each other. Look, you can. I've seen my sons compete against each other.
Yeah.
And if anything, they compete harder against each other, if it's possible, than they do in a normal game. Then they love each other after the game. So I think... With tight end U that we're seeing, and now the running backs are embracing each other, and the quarterbacks all know each other. I like what I'm seeing in the NFL. We don't have to hate each other. We want to beat each other.
Yeah.
We're going to compete to beat you. And, you know, on the field, I'm not your buddy. But, you know, after the game, everyone did their best, man. We're all doing the same thing. We're working our tails off to be the best that we can be and to win games. And the rivalries are good. And, like, we're watching a Super Bowl, right? We got the Chiefs and the Niners. Some of these guys are friends.
Yeah.
Like Kittle hangs out with Kelce. You see them in the interview the other day on opening
night.
Those guys are buddies, man. That doesn't mean they don't want to beat the hell out of each other on game day. Or, you know, if Travis plays his brother, they want to win. But you can still compete and have a lot of love for each other.
Well, man, we can't thank you enough for the time. And thanks to Low T Center for hooking it up. And have fun today. And good luck on Sunday. Nerves are going to be crazy, right?
I'm trying to stay as busy as possible so I don't think about it. But, I've learned that, just watched Ferris Bueller last night. He's like, look.
A lot to learn there.
You got to stop and look around once in a while or you're going to miss life, right? And so I try to enjoy it as much as possible. Try not to get too intense and just appreciate this as an unbelievable experience. I'm there win, lose, or draw for Christian. But we have great friends on this team. It feels like a family, even for Lisa and I. This team feels like a family to us because of all our friends. And so I hope it goes well, man. But I can't do a thing but sit up there and eat some food and enjoy the game.
Tell the wife the crazy guys from Dallas from last year said hello.
I will tell.
All right, buddy. Good luck.
Thanks.
And hopefully you have some proud papa moments on Sunday.
Let's hope so. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
There he goes, the great Ed McCaffrey. Sayonara, Ed. Sayonara.
Good dude.